I'd like to welcome Peter Rosenberger to the Caregiver Smile Summit. I think he's going to provide some needed inspiration and hope for our caregivers. He's a 30-year caregiver himself for his wife, Gracie, who lives with severe disabilities. He understands the journey. His weekly show, Hope for the Caregivers, is syndicated on more than 200 stations. He's an accomplished martial artist. He recently earned a second degree black belt in Hapkido. I hope I said that right, Peter.
You did.
Martial art provides many self-defense life lessons that Peter incorporates into his show and speaking. He's the author of several books, including Hope for the Caregiver and Seven Caregiver Landmines and How You Can Avoid Them. A fellow musician, a pianist for 50 years. I'm a guitar player for probably about the same. He recently released his new CD, Songs for the Caregiver. Peter and Gracie live in Nashville, and they serve. He serves as president and co-founder of Standing with Hope. And as I'm interviewing him, he just came back from Africa where they're doing some amazing work, and maybe we can talk about that at some point. So, Peter, welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit.
Anthony, thank you for allowing me the privilege of talking with you and with fellow caregivers, and it's a great joy. Let's have a good time today.
All right, my pleasure. So again, we're talking from the caregiver's voice, the caregiver's perspective. When you're a caregiver, how do you make time to get out when dealing with someone who can't?
You know, it's one of the issues that affects so many caregivers, that loss of independence. Caregivers suffer from three I's. We lose our independence, we lose our identity, and we become isolated. And that loss of independence is a real tough thing because some patients, some loved ones are so disabled or so needy that we can't get out and go just willy-nilly when we want to. So we have to strategically think about this for ourselves. We have to coordinate with people to come in and sit with them, but we have to get out. And even if it's just a walk around the block, we have to physically get away and just be able to detox, decompress, catch our breath, and do those things. You may not be able to do it for 3 days at a time, but you could do it for 30 minutes at a time.
So I wanted to backtrack a little bit and understand your own situation because, you know, I was a caregiver for a couple of years for my mom and a financial one before that. And I think caregivers think that, you know, there's when they're in it, there's no end. But in your case, you're a longtime caregiver and literally you don't know when an end is, and hopefully it's a long way away. So in your experience, how does this kind of differ and give a little history of Gracie and yourself and some of the lessons you've learned?
Well, I am a long-term, 32 years that I've been doing this now. We met in college. She had a car wreck when she was 17. She was recuperating from that when I transferred into the same college where she'd been attending. And she came back about a year and a half or so later and friends said, you know, you got to meet this girl. She had a terrible wreck, but you got to meet her. She'd had about 20 operations by the time I met her. Beautiful, beautiful young woman. And you can Google her and take my, and see that I'm not exaggerating. I mean, just the girl is just drop dead. Somebody was offering me a squeegee when I first met her because I was just drooling. And I was captivated by her strength. I was captivated by her personality and her beauty. And then I heard her sing and she's a real no kidding singer. And I was a pianist. She's a singer. A pianist found his singer, a singer found her pianist, and it was off to the races. I had no idea what it was like to be in a relationship with somebody who was hurt. She had a pronounced limp, a lot of scars on her lower leg. We're still finding out things that happened to her in this wreck. It was a very, very bad wreck. We got married and, you know, the surgeries kind of started. The doctor said, if you're going to have children, have them when you're young. We did. We didn't know if she could even have children. And it was it was a little bit remarkable that she was able to do that and carry our oldest son, Parker. But the damage on her right leg was pretty tough. She ended up having that leg amputated after he was born. And then our second son, she became pregnant with our second son and had that leg amputated, the left leg amputated after he was born. It didn't cause it. It just accelerated the problem.
Right.
And so here she was in her 20s, two children and a double amputee. She's had seasons where she's done pretty well in life. When watching her learn to ski as a double amputee was pretty amazing, snow skiing. And she trained with the disabled ski program for years to do that. She tried all kinds of things, But there's still other factors involved. Her back was messed up. I mean, the limbs wouldn't heal very well, so she had multiple revisions to the amputated limbs. And the surgery count now has just mushroomed up to over 80 that I can count, plus another 80, 90, 100 of smaller procedures that she's ongoing with now. She just had one 2 weeks ago. And that doesn't show any sign of stopping. 80, 90, 100 doctors have treated her, 12 different hospitals, 7 different insurance companies, well over $10 million. And it just keeps going. Like you said, it's there's no sign of this thing abating. So what I've learned through this is to deal with this relentless onslaught. There's no rebuilding after the storm. There's just constantly living in the storm. So my approach is a little bit different than a lot of people. I have not reached the end of this journey and then look back and hear some lessons learned. I'm still slugging it out every single day, but I've learned a couple of things about the heart of a caregiver. And that's that we can live a calmer, healthier, and even more joyful life in this. We don't have to wait for our loved one to get better or worse before we start living a healthy life. In fact, it's imperative that we don't take that mentality. So this is the message I bring to caregivers. And because of the longevity I've had in this, I mean, you're looking at 3+ decades. I've had ample time to look at this mountain pretty hard.
Yeah.
And the learning curve is so steep. And so caregivers, I implore them to say, okay, look, do you really have this kind of time? I've made the mistakes. I'm the crash test dummy of caregivers. I've made the mistakes, every kind of mistake. I've forgotten more mistakes than most people are going to make. Here's what we can learn from them, and here's how we can strengthen each other in the middle of it. And this is why what you're doing here in this summit is so important, because you're bringing a collection of people who bring this vast amount of experience. I don't know what the combined experience of everybody involved is, but I would imagine we're into hundreds and hundreds of years of combined experience. How important is that to the family caregiver to be able to have that kind of resource? And this is what I am on a mission to do with my fellow caregivers and myself, Anthony. I mean, I listen to my own show. I read my own book because I got to have somebody with my level of experience. So I'm preaching to myself and everybody else gets to listen because I've got to do this. I have caregiver amnesia.
Yeah.
And so I have to remind myself of these things all the time.
Great. Well, thank you for that background. So, you know, what are some of these caregiver landmines that you talk about?
Well, one of the biggest one is the loss of identity. For me, that's when, you know, I can't count how many people have asked me how my wife is doing. Can't count that number. But I can count the ones who ask about me. And I remember one time I was, as a pianist, I've accompanied her, and this will mean something to you as a guitarist, but I've been accompanying her for years, and she's done some very big stages over her career with it. And my pastor asked me to play at church one time on Sunday mornings as people were coming in, just to kind of give a reverent atmosphere to the church and quiet people down. So I got up and I started playing these hymns that I've played since I was a child. I grew up, my dad's a pastor, I grew up in the church. I knew these hymns, but as I was playing them, I realized I was playing the changes. I was playing the harmonies. I wasn't playing the melody because I was hearing her voice in my head singing it. And I was playing around her voice, and I realized nobody knew what I was playing.
Isn't that interesting?
I had to go back and teach myself to play the melody. And my piano professor, who I get together with him about once a month. He still gives me master classes. He's a great jazz player. And he tells me that if you can't, as a pianist, play the melody expressively with one finger, he said, then you don't really know the song that well. And I had to go back and force myself, sometimes with one finger, to play hymns and songs that I've known for a lifetime, because I lost the melody. And that's when I realized, as a caregiver, I've got to find the melody for myself. I've got to find my voice. I've got to learn to speak in first person singular. All too many caregivers don't know how to do that. Take a test on somebody, ask them, how are you doing? Well, we just got home from the hospital, or he had a bad night, or she's not doing too well, or our situation is this. And I will tell that to my fellow caregivers. Say, look, I didn't ask how all that was. I just said, how are you doing? And that's when the tears come. That's when the stammering comes. But that's okay. I don't care what comes after the word I, because now we can have a real conversation. Maybe it's I'm just furious. I'm resentful. I'm outraged. I'm depressed. I am despondent. Whatever comes after the word I, it's an honest conversation now that we can have as caregivers, and then let's start leading each other to a place of safety where we can catch our breath.
Yeah, it's probably the one time where I is better than we, though it's great to operate in harmony. I clearly hear what you're saying. That's a great example. Yeah. So what other landmines?
The other one is guilt. It's a big issue for caregivers. And I'm not talking about guilt over big sins that get great press. You know, I'm not talking about that. Those are guilt worthy. We've all got that in our lives at some point, you know, of some level of things that we've just done wrong. I'm talking about feeling guilty over things we have no control over. I feel guilty if I just want to sit down and watch TV for an hour uninterrupted. I feel guilty because I could stand in the shower and she can't, or that there are parents who feel guilty for bringing a special needs child into the world. They have no control over this. You feel guilty for just wishing I know a lot of caregivers who just struggle with, I just wish they would just go on home to be with the Lord, you know, and they feel guilty for even feeling that way. We shouldn't feel guilty about any of those things. We just need to accept that this is the way it is, and it's okay. And if I want to sit down and have a quiet meal without any drama, I shouldn't feel guilty about that. And instead of guilt, I ask caregivers to give themselves some grace. I need grace so much. I married a woman named Grace. And grace doesn't mean it doesn't matter. Grace doesn't mean all those things. It just means that we're going to be a little bit easier on ourselves and give ourselves some kindness, grace, and space, and treat each other treat ourselves with a lot more compassion. You know, I don't think I would hang around people who treated me the way I treat myself. And I bet you the caregivers watching today feel the same way. We are relentless on ourselves. And let me give you an example. We caregivers judge ourselves without mercy over our job performance. We see every flaw, every mistake, and we will often just beat ourselves like a rented mule, you know, without any kind of compassion over what we do. And so that's how we judge ourselves. And so I say to my fellow caregivers, if you're going to judge yourself by your job performance, okay, I get that. I'm the same way. Let's be fair and let's judge ourselves also by our attendance record, which is flawless, because we keep showing up. And that's an example of giving ourselves grace by recognizing, you know what? What we're doing is Herculean at best. It's impossible, really, to do this and to do it flawlessly, but yet we keep showing up perfectly. So yeah, we're going to make mistakes. Learn from them, own them when it's yours, quickly make amends for it, and then move on, because you don't have time to wallow in self-flagellation. You know, we've got to learn to treat ourselves with grace and recognize that we are in an impossible situation that we cannot fix, we cannot change, we cannot undo. We are called to be stewards in it. And so instead of just heaping more guilt on ourselves, we can learn to treat ourselves with kindness and grace and compassion.
Yeah, great points. As a Catholic, I know all about that Catholic guilt thing going on, and had a mother who didn't have any cognitive issues to boot. So yeah, interesting. But I like grace instead of guilt. And, you know, it is interesting. I've talked to more people. Of course, you know, we're of that age where we have all kind of friends who are going through caregiving situations with elders. And, you know, those thoughts pop in your mind about, you know, why doesn't the Lord just take her? And, you know, we can't control those thoughts. They kind of come and go. And
the fact that you and I can have this open conversation about this is going to inspire more than one to say, oh, I thought I was the only one. And you're not.
Yeah.
And it's okay. You know, my wife is asked that question sometimes about her own life. You know, why must I have to go through all this? How can a good and loving God look down at this? We don't know those answers.
Yeah.
And we're not going to know those answers. And we trust him because of his goodness, that there is more to this. And that gets into my faith component. I'm not going to take people down that road unless they want to call me and ask me about it. But I've learned that there's more to the picture than meets the eye. And we're never going to feel better about this, Anthony. Never. My wife is in pain relentlessly. She doesn't have legs. She's facing very difficult days ahead of her. I'm never going to feel better about this. But we can be better in this. We can be better individuals. We can be healthy individuals. We can be joyful individuals. We can be wiser individuals. We can see beauty in ways that we didn't see it before. We can be better. And that's what I'm on a mission to help fellow caregivers do.
Yeah.
And myself do.
Yeah. Cause you're constantly learning as well. I get it. Yep. And I talk about, you know, part of this being an opportunity, at least for, you know, some of our caregivers who are caring for elders may not know their, you know, we talk about life stories and learning about that person who, you know, you probably don't know three quarters about their life because you didn't have the time or the inclination to ask. And now what a great opportunity you have to get to know somebody better.
So absolutely. So, and, you know, it's not just taking care of what you traditionally think of when somebody was disabled or whatever. You also think about children with autism,
yep,
Down syndrome. These are not terminal diseases. These are things that are going to affect that child for the rest of their life, and the parents have to think beyond the grave. Then you think about somebody with mental illness. Then you think about somebody with an addiction issue. Alcoholism is a disease. Opioid dependency and drug addiction is a disease. If you have a disease, you got a caregiver. And so I've really expanded the scope of what I do to help anybody who is dealing with anybody who has an impairment. Because that's what a caregiver is. It's somebody who loves somebody with an impairment of some kind, and they're putting themselves between that loved one and even worse disaster. And so the impairments can extend, the list of impairments can extend beyond the horizon. So I want those folks that are watching this right now who are dealing with somebody who has a substance abuse problem to understand their journey as a caregiver is real, it's valid, it's important to address their needs, and they didn't cause what their loved one is going through, and they can't undo it. They're not responsible for what somebody puts in their body, in their mouth, in their veins.
Yeah.
They are responsible for their own heart and their own healthiness, and that's the journey of a caregiver.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that. So, you know, one of the things caregivers face almost immediately is kind of a physical isolation. Friends, you know, who you thought were friends maybe are afraid, don't know what to ask, don't know what to do. But there's also an emotional isolation. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I have said for years that caregivers can feel isolated in a crowded room. They can feel isolated on a crowded church pew. Mm. And we can, because the dark places in our mind separate us from folks sometimes more than the physical logistics. We're afraid to open up our hearts because what's in there is so painful. And so what I'm trying to do with my show and the way I speak and so forth about it is penetrate into that isolation to use my own journey and to say, look, I get it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to bring it out into the light. We're going to say this, and then we're going to develop some strategies to help us all learn how to push back against that isolation. Call somebody. I know the phone feels like it's 100 pounds sometimes. Pick it up and call someone. And if the person you're calling doesn't treat you with kindness and respect, never call them again and write them off their list. Take them out of your phone book, because there are people out there who will love you and will care for you. And that's why I do my show is live. When people, I want people to call in and let them know this is your place. This is your time.
Yeah.
And that's one way you can do. But and then when you talk to somebody, don't make them drink from the fire hose. The first time it's going to feel a little bit awkward, but first, it's okay to say, you know what? It's a beautiful day, or this happened today and I thought it was, celebrate with me on this. You don't have to go and just dump all your woes and troubles on somebody. If you go out to lunch with them for the first time, you'll get to do it again. And so just go slow. If you've been parched in a desert with no water, you don't want to guzzle it the first time you get a glass of water. You got to drink it and sip it slow. So when you push back against that isolation, understand you're going to be desperate for any kind of contact. Let's back off on the desperation and let's just do a little bit slow and rejoice in it and just let it sit. Just slow down. That's one of the biggest issues with caregivers, is that we're running at breakneck pace here. And so I tell people, get lost in the fog of caregivers, fear, obligation, and guilt, the fog of caregivers, which leads to heartache, anger, and turmoil. And you spell it all together, it says Fog Hat, because I like 70s music. And what was the number one song of Fog Hat?
You're going to test me. I have no idea.
Slow Ride.
That's right.
So
take it easy.
Slow Ride. And if that doesn't help you, go listen to the Eagles and say, take it easy. Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Slow down. Breathe. 4 seconds in, 8 seconds out. And then you approach all your relationships and you push back on that isolation with calmness, with purpose, with clarity of mind. It'll feel a little bit awkward at first. You got to practice it. But you can do this. And that's how you do it. Pick up the phone and call someone and find a trusted source. Go to a support group. Go to counseling. You don't have to spend a fortune to go to a psychiatrist. You can go to a licensed clinical social worker, a licensed mental health professional, somebody that's licensed. Don't go to a life coach because they're not really equipped to deal right with some of these things. Start off with a clergy if you have to. That's a great place to start, but they'll transition you into someone. If you've got an EAP service at your work, call them. Push back against the isolation and raise your hand and say, I hurt. I'm scared. I'm lonely. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I need help.
Right, right. Thank you for that. So you kind of talked about the caregiver, you know, pushing back and reaching out. What about the non-caregivers who might happen upon these videos? You talk about, you know, people not asking about the caregiver. I guess first, what's their thought processes? Are they just, they don't know what to say? And what would you encourage people who are not caregivers, but no caregivers, to re-engage with them and to support them?
Very good point. One of my big issues that I do is I help give caregivers a vocabulary to identify what help looks like and inspire them and encourage them to ask for that help. That I also give non-caregivers the vocabulary of what it looks like to help a caregiver and encourage them to offer that help. And what it looks like to, let me start with what it doesn't look like. Don't ask a caregiver, let me know if there's something I can do for you. Don't say that to a caregiver, because now I got to think of something for you to do. Don't do that. Be a little bit more direct on what you're offering or asking. Hey, I'm at the grocery store. Can I pick you up some milk? Is there something you need real quick? Hey, I got a guy that does my gutters at my house. Can I send him over to do your house and I'll just cover that? Because I guarantee you, if the caregiver is tired and worn out, I bet you their home is too. Ask a caregiver, when's the last time you saw your doctor? Have you gotten a physical this year? Good question. Very good question to ask, because 72% of caregivers don't see their own doctor and they feel like, well, I can't leave them alone. Yeah, you can. And you're going to have to, because if you're not healthy, who's in line behind you to take care of them? Right. Most caregivers don't realize that they're only one sprained ankle away from this thing turning into a Greek tragedy. So if you want to help a caregiver, offer to do specific things. Don't give generalities. And one of the things I tell people a lot of times in the South, I don't know if you'd tell that or not, I'm from the South, but you know, wherever two or three are gathered, there's macaroni and cheese. I mean, we know what to do with a short-term problem, but you know, you don't want to simply just throw food at a situation. You want to be able to equip them to be self-sustaining. I knew of a lady who'd been taking care of her husband for about 5 years. He had a brain issue, and it was a pretty tough situation, and her car broke down. And she finally worked up the nerve to ask somebody at church, you know, hey, my car broke down. I really could use some help. And the lady at church, God love her, but she said, you know what? We're going to pray for you, and I'm going to bring you a meal. And the lady looked at her, and God love her for working up the courage to ask this. She said, you know, I really appreciate the prayers and the meals, but I need a mechanic.
Right.
You know, you can't drive a tuna casserole to work. You've got to think beyond just the immediate of what you understand and pray for them. Please pray for them, but don't make a big production of telling them you're going to pray for them. It's like going to the post office and you see somebody carrying a bunch of boxes. You say, brother, you look to be burdened down. I'm going to pray for you. Well, hold the door while you do it. You know, pray for them, but don't make a big production about it. Your prayers and your thoughts are between you and God. Your actions are between you and that caregiver.
Yeah.
Give them something of substance. You don't have to write a check. It doesn't have to cost you money to do these things. It can be just simply being aware of what's going on with them. You know, one of the sponsors on my show is a company that has a club for home maintenance of your heating, air conditioning, and your water heater and all that kind of stuff. And I called the head of this company and I said, look, I said, I'm getting ready to do a show for caregivers. You guys want to sponsor it? And you could tell this guy was just not even in the, he was not there. And I said, because if mom's watching dad, who's watching the water heater? And when I asked that question, I had his full attention. This is a big company. And I had his full attention. And I said, we've got to understand that when is a good time for a single mom with a disabled child to have her heating unit go out in the wintertime? So regular maintenance, if dad's living alone, do you really want him underneath the house looking at the ductwork? These are little things that we can do. And by the way, that service, it costs less than $10 a month. And they come out four times a year. They were just here at my house doing it. You know, when's a good time for me to be on the roof blowing out my gutters as a caregiver of a wife with no legs? So there's little things like that we think about of the ongoing needs, okay? Please pray. Please have your thoughts and prayers and all that kind of stuff, but keep that to yourself and between you and God. Let's offer tangible help to a caregiver. Make sure their car is working properly, you know? Are their tires in good shape? Are they being rotated and balanced? You know, all those kind of, can I take your car to go get it inspected or whatever? Little things like that mean an enormous amount because it means you're paying attention to the real needs of these folks. Can we sit with your loved one while you go to your doctor or you go to a support group?
Yep. I mean, you talk about regular maintenance of a car, but it's regular maintenance of your body as well. You know, I'm in a situation where I became caregiver for my sister predeceased my mom, and she was her caregiver. Those statistics are real. So, you know, keep maintenance on yourself as well. So what do we do, you know, to kind of get some of these dark thoughts that weigh on us off of our shoulders?
This is a problem for a lot of caregivers. It's in the news a lot. And it's going to, unfortunately, Anthony, it's going to be more. We had a situation in Tennessee here where a guy, they had a nonverbal son with autism, 5 years old, and they killed him, beat him to death. Okay. And then they said he ran off because a lot of children with autism elope. And so everybody was out looking for this child, but this guy in reality had killed him. And the mother had basically watched it. And it was just a horrific story. Then you had a news out in Oregon of a lady who just killed her disabled child and then tried to kill herself. You're having situations where an older couple, a guy's taking care of his wife mostly. And a friend of mine's grandparents did this when I was growing up. I'd heard this story and I it was such a tragic thing. Where the husband is taking care of the wife who has Alzheimer's or some type of debilitating cognitive disease. And then he gets a bad diagnosis himself and they see no resources, no way out. So he'll kill her and then turn the gun on himself. This is happening on a all too frequent, tragically frequent basis because these dark thoughts and that isolation overcome a caregiver. So for caregivers, they may not be able to punch through that level by themselves. They're going to need some professional help. It's our job as people who see them and love them as fellow human beings, particularly in churches, because I think pastors and clergy have a front row seat to so many family dynamics. And so say something. When's the last time you saw your doctor is a great way to start doing that. Because if you just get them to their doctor and let them, please tell your doctor you're a caregiver. And if your doctor is ambivalent to the fact that you're a caregiver, get another doctor. If your pastor is ambivalent to the fact that you're a caregiver, get another pastor. Mm-hmm. But say something. I encourage political leaders and so forth to say something. Look at this opioid crisis. You show me somebody on opioids. And I'll show you a caregiver in their orbit. And not all, and it's not on the other side of the track issue. You've got somebody on opioids who's not abusing, but if you got somebody on opioids, it's affecting them. And it's affecting every relation they have, even if they're not abusing them. And I remember I went through this with my wife, who's been on some kind of pain medication for 35 years. And I filled 7 figures worth of prescriptions over the years from all these different doctors, and not one doctor ever looked at me and said, dude, we're putting a lot of chemicals into your wife's body over a long period of time. You might want to get some help for yourself. Nobody ever said that to me, ever.
Yeah.
And so what I'm doing is and you're helping me do it, we're raising our hands and say, we're going to say this. It's okay for you to get help. It's okay that you are struggling with this. This is not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of failure. This is a sign that you are carrying something that is so freaking heavy that you're going to have to ask for help. Will you please trust me on this and raise your hand and let's go get some help?
Yeah. And the opioid crisis has been almost a direct correlation between that and the whole kinship, grandparents raising kids, trend that we're starting to see. So it's kind of crazy.
But those dark thoughts are not going to go away on their own.
Yeah.
They will not go away on their own, and they certainly won't go away in isolation. You have to work with it. And it's not a one and done thing, Anthony. It's not something you just do once and, okay, I got this. It's a constant reinforcement of this. I do this myself. I listen to a lot of stand-up comics. I mean, I love comedy. I need to laugh. Jeff Foxworthy and I did a whole bit on You Might Be a Caregiver If. That's hysterical. And when I first did it, people thought I was being disrespectful to caregivers. And then they looked at my resume and said, well, okay, he understands the journey. But, you know, if while at the grocery store, you're the one asking for a price check on suppositories, you're probably a caregiver. You know, if a hospital bed has never hampered your love life, you're probably a caregiver. Or my favorite is, if you've ever hooked up your dog to your wife's wheelchair just to see if it would work, and I've done it. You know, and so I encourage caregivers to laugh. I help make them laugh because I think laughter is a pressure valve release for them in their journey. And they need to know that they have permission to laugh. And it's going to take somebody with my level of experience that they'll believe it. They won't necessarily believe it from others, but they'll believe it from somebody who's done it for 32 years through a medical nightmare, that it really is okay to laugh. And I give them that. And on my show, and when I speak a lot, you'll see I take right turns from the incredibly serious, and then I'll take a right turn into something just goofy and start, you know, doing something idiotic, because that gives them an escape to be able to, okay, we're going to talk about the serious, but I'm going to let you take a breath for a minute. That's so important for fellow caregivers to learn to laugh, to push back against those dark thoughts, but you've got to raise your hand and ask for some help, professional help,
yeah.
Professional help.
Yeah, well, we're very kindred in our approach to speaking, because I wind up doing the same types of things. Well, Peter, I could talk to you for another hour, but the limitations of our summit have to have me end at this point. But I know there's about another dozen topics that in the future I'd love to explore with you. I mean, certainly you have, I was just remarking it to myself, you have the announcer voice. You have the passion of a preacher, and you're on a mission that's doing so good in the world. So I am blessed to have now come to know you better, and really want to thank you for being on the summit.
It is my pleasure. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And thank you, Anthony. Thank you for helping me lift others up who are really struggling, and let's get them to safety where they can start developing some better strategies to start living a healthy life. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Peter.
You're welcome.